This is Expansion with Sophia on republicbroadcasting.org, the RBN network. We're entering the second hour of a show today on waste management, and I reviewed a fascinating 2008 February issue article from Harper's Magazine during the first hour entitled Wasteland, which I urge everyone to go to the library and find and read. And I have William Roberts on now, who's also an RBN host. William, I wanted to mention that you said that there were these three densities of I guess, environments that we, population environments. So we have dense urban, then we have suburban and rural, right? And
yes.
It appears that the dense urban environments are already set up with what I would call rather a bad plan, using water to flush waste. Because you can't expect somebody to take a pail of stuff and carry it somewhere, you know, in their car, where? On a bus, to a composting center? Somebody told me about a sawdust composting toilet, which consists of literally a 5-gallon pail under the toilet that you fill with sawdust as the pail becomes filled with use of the toilet, the waste, and that the mixture of, this has to be sawmill sawdust. It has to have a certain kind of flake. It can't be too fine, the granularity. And after the bucket is filled, you carry it outside to this big, huge bin, and you throw the contents in there, and you slap the lid on, and the bin, apparently the methane, nitrogen, and the decomposition of the waste and sawdust create temperatures of 150 degrees. And so this nicely renders everything in that bin into compost that's perfectly 100% you know, usable. But you can't expect people in urban areas to be doing this.
That's exactly right. And there are many companies out there that make, and especially in Canada, some that I've looked at myself, I have their catalogs and catalog cuts. There are many out there that make composting toilets. Some of the better ones use a peat moss as the carrier, as the agent. There are many different ways of going about it. At the same time, when you're involved in a dense urban type of a development area and suburban areas, that's not going to work out too well. First of all, we need to consider the big city. And recently I was down in Dallas. I grew up basically in Alaska, but moved at the last year of my high school experience to Seattle, Washington. But if you're on the 63rd floor of some building, you're not going to be taking a pail of sawdust or peat moss and having the janitors carry that down to the street. And then what are they going to do with it? It's paved for miles. And so then you'd have to load it on a truck and take it someplace. And so all of this is basically replicated in the process that was described in the article that they do in Manhattan. They do it with water carriage, and water carriage has been around for a while, but not forever. Go back to about 1815 in London, and all the way up until about 1880 in Paris. It was against the law to put human waste in storm water. And so the rise of the Industrial Revolution, if you will, brings us up to the three more categories that we can put in here. But let me add one more. We had the dense urban, let's say the cityscape. We have the suburban, the rural, and the but then also we have commercial. We got to get into that a little bit too.
Yes, we'll pick up. Republicbroadcasting.org, the RBN network. This is the show Expansion, and I'm Sophia, your host, and today we're discussing waste management. We have William Roberts, another RBN host who's had quite a background in urban planning, which also includes, I think, some work on planning sewage systems. William, we have a caller on the line. Would you like to see what he has to say?
Absolutely. Let's bring the callers on when they come on.
Okay. Richard in Massachusetts.
Hi.
Hi, Richard.
Find your subject fascinating. And you're both right. Nobody wants to think about it or talk about it. But, you know, it's a problem that has been with us forever. I mean, the Romans and the Greeks had problems eliminating their waste. But it seems to me that we have to look at two areas that handle their waste. I'm not sure if it's effectively or not, but one of them is NASA, and they have a number of technologies they use to recycle urine so that it can be used as drinking water. And I don't know if it's efficient. I've never studied it. This is the first time I've ever even considered the idea. But the second area, which is thousands of years old, is China. And in China, the in rural areas that I know of, what they do is dig a hole and put a 4-foot diameter sewer pipe. And, of course, they line it, and it's all protected to the outside of the sewer pipe. But then they collect animal waste and perhaps their own waste. I don't know. But they put it into this container and put a lid on it with two holes in it. One is about 3/4 of an inch in diameter, and the other one is 1/4 of that size. And they feed the 3/4 inch line into the house, and they actually produce methane gas to burn. That seems to be an effective a solution for them. I don't know if it would work for us, but what do you think?
Well, what happens to the stuff that's decomposing? I mean, yes, it's releasing methane, which is great. We can use the methane, but the material that's left, does that just become an organic thing that they can use? What do? They never look in that pit again? They just
No.
keep filling it?
No, they have to fill it about once a month, I think. But the old stuff, the stuff that has decomposed, they use as fertilizer. And I know this because when I went to the Orient, we were told not to eat salads because they had public toilets available to everybody in town, and they used to collect the excrement and decompose it and use it for fuel and fertilizer.
And you were told not to eat salads?
That's correct.
And why?
Because that stuff was fertilized with human waste.
Oh, I see. Okay. So, but that's, again, that's the Western viewpoint that abhors and recoils from something like that. But the thing about these other cultures that have these practices you've just brought up, they're not taking Prozac. They're not on these horrible chemicals that are, you know, they addicted to drugs and whatnot. And I'm talking pharmaceutical drugs. And this is what I think William was bringing up also, that the pills are recovered in whole form. But then there's also the residue. Didn't you say, William, that you can't digest? These pills don't get digested? Or did you mean by the sewage, by being dropped into water, they don't break down?
Well, just dropping a pill, and good points, Richard. Just dropping, you know, you can just take the pills in your cabinet and put one each in a glass of water, leave it overnight, and see who's still with you in the morning, in whole form. And it gives you an idea, and some of them are undigestible. It's basically a scam. They just pass through the body. Let's say you take your morning vitamins, or you've got a prescription regimen, and you're taking vitamins three times a day or four times a day, and yet you're passing your waste two or three times a day because you're eating frequently. If you were to just take those fecal samples, if you will, and let them dry out and then just open them all up on a plate of glass or something, you might find quite a few of your pills still there. They never did you a bit of good. But let's go back, because he brings up some of the things I want to talk about. We've got this dense urban, the suburban, the rural, the commercial. One of the parts of it we need to understand is that processed water is an animal of itself. It's not quite the same as the water that we have around, but at the same time, even in commercial applications where there's tremendous volume of water going, that water is generally not connected to the sewer system. But you might have a place where all of a sudden 4 or 5 times a day, like a Boeing or a big steel plant or something like that, where you've got 10, 15, 20, 30,000 employees now on a 100-acre site or 200-acre site, and you've got this enormous effluent every day right there. So we've got lots of different aspects of it. We can take it on another threefold, another trinity, if you will, and look at developed countries, the industrialized world, developing countries, the agricultural mercantile environment, and then the undeveloped countries, which we might just consider to be living in a state of nature. Now, obviously, with NASA, they'll have, the $5,000 urine recycling tube or something like that, where you can pee in a tube, and then it goes through a Berkey sport filter, and you can actually drink what the product is. And certainly, people that have been mountain climbing or someplace in the desert or have run out of water and they realize that they can just drink their urine. It's not going to kill you, and it puts the water back. You don't lose that water. And the military understand that very well also. In China, as well as many developing nations, they've come up with a variety of different solutions, if you will, temporary. Some of them are effective, some of them are not. But when we start to multiply, when you start to bring in large densities, even large densities of people living in a village environment, if you will, without an advanced system of any kind to deal with their various wastes, the problem just magnifies. And so if we go back and understand that when we went into the Industrial Revolution, the 1776 to the 1850s, 1860s, when we really started to industrialize. Up until that time, much was done by hand. And then we went to King Steam. And from King Steam, we went to King Electricity. And when we went to electricity, our lives changed. And when we changed our lifestyles and started having everyone move into the cities, then we experienced this high density, high demand type of a problem, which is totally unnatural. It's the beehive, if you will. And this is where this article that you brought up today it focuses, because it's trying to, they're doing, and it sounds to me like they're successfully dealing with an enormous challenge, and that is, how do you deal with all of this human excreta and other water wastes and things like that? So these are real issues. Now let's go back to the state of nature in the undeveloped place. When you dig a pit, and the United States and all of the United Nations agencies, they go around and they help the rest of the nations out. They talk about boring deep holes, and they dig pits, and they put in pipes, and they methane, and they do all of that. But reality is this, that in the top 6 inches of the soil, all the microorganisms that are necessary to decompose anything and everything that falls on the ground, with anything, all things natural, that all exists in that first 6 inches of soil. You dig a pit 4 feet deep, 3 feet deep, 2 feet deep, and everything from the from the 6-inch level down is going to be in a challenge, and it's just going to sit there and putrefy because there's just not enough enzymes. Most everyone out there has at some time in your life seen a catalog that advertises a doggy dooley system. The doggy dooley is all, it's just a way, a little thing that you put out in your yard, and if you have a pet, you can put their waste matter in there and sprinkle a little bit of enzyme powder on the top of it, and it hastens the decomposition. From time to time, once every 6 months or so, you can move that, and what you've left behind is a perfect place to plant a bush or a flower tree. So another way of looking at it is a system that I used in my little log cabin. For many of the listeners that have listened to Become Vocal Local on a regular basis, I spent about 14 years living in a two-room log cabin, 12 of 24. And I got all my water off of one of the sides of my shop building, right off the roof into rain barrels. And I used a night soil 5-gallon pail with a snap-on lid. Bought it right out of the Cabela's magazines, manufactured in in the lid was manufactured in Canada. But every day you'd have whatever you've got in your little bucket there. And just by simply digging a hole about 24 inches wide and 4 or 5 inches deep, you could just pour all the contents into that hole and then just spade the soil back in and just shovel it in lightly. Now, in a period of 14 years, I worked in a space that was about 6 feet wide and 20 feet long. And I just went around and around and around and around digging these holes and digging these pits. And every time you go around, the soil becomes blacker and blacker and easier to dig. And it decomposes it faster and faster, and there's no problem. But those solutions aren't available in a dense area. They would be available in a suburb if you didn't have a wife and 5 children to try and deal with. So that it magnifies it.
Yes. We'll be back in 3 minutes, and we'll continue.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Listening to Expansion on republicbroadcasting.org, the RBN network. This is Sophia, your host, and I am discussing today the subject of waste management. I have William Roberts on the line. He has his own show on RBN. And William, I wanted to bring up something that you know an awful lot about, this Agenda 21 program of regulating our lives and increasingly kind of squishing us into sustainability, the concept of sustainability. Now, I have heard that in San Diego County, where I live in California, there is going to be a local regulation of water consumption limiting each individual to 30 gallons per day. Now, I believe the modern toilet, the older toilets flushed 5 gallons at a pop, and these newer toilets, some of them are as low, I think, as 1.5, but standard is about 3. So 30 gallons is plenty for a person to use the toilet a few times, take a shower, do some dishes. But I believe in Agenda 21, they're going to cut us down to 10 gallons a day per person. And with 10 gallons a day, if we're dependent on water to carry away our waste, we're not going to be able to go to the bathroom and shower in the same day. So I also wanted to mention, before you comment on that, that it appears to me that industrial use of water is just flagrant. I am a vegan and proud of it, which means I don't eat anything from animals. And I have learned that just to prepare 1 cow carcass, after the animal has been slaughtered, to clean it, to wash the blood, trim it, gut it, chop it into steaks, for each cow, it's 800 gallons of water to bring it to the store. So industry, and I'm sure, I think the semiconductor industry uses gallons of water to make wafers. I think somewhere I read, I can't even believe it, 6-inch wafer is 20,000 gallons of water. So are they going to regulate industry in the same way? Or are they going to put it on the backs of the individual, punish us, make us take the squeeze?
Well, as we've talked about in the last time I was here on Expansions with you, Sophia, we understand sustainable development best when we understand that it's driven by demand. And yes, indeed, in fact, it's going to go on the back of the people. Basically, in the redistribution of the wealth scheme that has been driving collectivism for a long time, the idea is to bring the developed nations down to the level of the Bolivian peasant so that they can announce and declare that they have a victory where there's no inequality among people. Everyone has the same lifestyle. Their quality of life is the same, which is miserable. But let's look at that, though, some of those numbers and think about water. Again, in the system that where I lived for so long, getting my rainwater off the one roof, it was 12 by about 24, a corrugated galvanized roof, into 50-gallon food-grade Nalgene plastic barrels that had been used to hold apple juice concentrate. I bought them at a flea market, $5 a piece. And I never was out of water. Never once in the years I was there did I ever run out. I was low sometimes. I had to marshal my water very carefully. But it prohibits a lot of things. I used somewhere between 2 and 4 gallons of water a day and lived poorly, but lived fine on it. But you have to reevaluate and redo your entire lifestyle. You're not connected to a shower. Even if you use a little solar water bag and put 2 or 3 gallons of water in that and have a hot solar shower in the summertime or in a fall or a spring day when you get enough heat to be able to get that water warm enough, you're still using 2 or 3 gallons at a pop. For about a quart and a half of water heated in a kettle on the wood stove or on my propane gas range, you can sponge bathe out of an enamel pan with a cloth and a scrub brush or whatever you need. And get the job done, and then towel off, and you're fine. So we have come to, let's go back and think about this idea. Once we went into the industrial age, and we were introduced to Mr. Electricity, and piped gas, natural gas, sewer gas, methane gas, all the various piped gases, we went from the gas lamp to an electric lamp to an electric hot water heater to electric well pumps, and all of the work that was involved in that cabin living, that cabin dwelling, went away. And so we were no longer connected. I mean, just ask in honesty, how many people brushed their teeth this morning and left the water running while they were brushing their teeth? Most people would. But I would take a juice glass and fill it about halfway with water and brush my teeth and rinse my mouth out and use, you know, a few ounces of water to do the same process. You can stand in front of a sink with the spigot turned on high and brush your teeth and see about 4 or 5 gallons just go right down the drain. So,
William, that's because you were having to collect your water. You were having to provide your water for yourself. But we don't. I turn off the water when I brush my teeth. I taught myself that a long time ago. But I guess I'm different. I don't know if people had to haul and fetch water in urns and walk around with it on their heads, then they would think differently.
Absolutely.
So we have our break, and I'd love to pick this up on the other side.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Listening to Expansion on republicbroadcasting.org, the RBN network. This is Sophia, your host, and I'm talking about waste and waste management. We have William Roberts with us, who is another RBN host and someone well-versed in urban planning and land use development. And I do think we have a caller on the line right now, William. His name is Mike in Kentucky. Are you on the line, Mike?
Yeah. Last hour you talked about some stuff about the reuse of human cadavers and all sorts of things that's in this industry to even put it publicly traded on a stock market and things like that.
Yes.
And when you were talking about that last hour, first thing that came to my mind was the old classic with Charlton Heston, the famous last line that people make fun of, "It's people," if you remember that. Not Omega Man, I'm trying to remember what it was called.
Soylent Green.
Soylent Green, where, you know, now I think in that movie they tried to depict that the oceans had died and all this, you know, it was a catastrophe, but you never really knew whether it was or not. You know, they just kind of played it out like that, and then he found out that they were recycling people into food.
So it's basically, it was a propaganda movie to get you ready to be able to deal with Agenda 21.
Well, I think so, yeah. I think they've been, I think there's some good people in Hollywood, but a lot of times it looks like a lot of the stuff that they put forward like this, it's almost like they're bragging about it, saying, here's what we're going to do, and you can't do nothing about it.
Some of the best people in Hollywood are the bid actors, and the people that are the most nefarious are at the upper levels of the production staff, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and others, where they basically are being given their suggestions as to the movies, and oftentimes the plot line, and sometimes even the dialogue. So we need to be aware that we've been moved into this direction. And as we go deeper into this, we'll start to see the financial implications that are involved here are enormous as well. But good points. I don't think that the article addressed the introduction of cadavers, actually. That usually is either cremation or ground burial and things like that. But there's certainly a lot of dead animals and dead creatures that find their way into this process. And then as it goes through the settlement, the sediments and the trash removal and whatnot, most of that stuff gets decomposed chemically and burned up.
Well, I think it's another Hollywood kind of cliche sort of thing, like when they assassinate somebody, they send in a so-called cleaner that uses acid or something to dissolve the cadaver and let it go down the drain, you know, to get rid of the evidence. But, you know, I thought that the host, I'm sorry, I can't remember your name, but I thought you were the one that mentioned that kind of stuff, not necessarily.
No, there was one word in the article that the root of which is cadaver, but I don't think it was talking about that.
Okay.
As William said,
yeah.
I can't find it right now.
Well, that goes back a long way. I think there was some Scottish author that wrote a book called Indecent Proposal way back in the 1700s or 1800s, which talked about using women to grow babies for food. I mean, this is an old idea. But what you'd mentioned earlier about the composting toilets, and I think those are a great idea. I've studied those for an idea for a long time. And you supposedly you can make your own and that sort of stuff. But from what I'd read about them, you were only supposed to use the compost on like evergreen trees and shrubs. You couldn't use it on your garden because human waste has heavy metals, and even if you're eating healthy and things like that, or organic or stuff, there's still stuff in there that, and that goes back to biblical law. We're not supposed to, you know, we're supposed to keep our waste separate from our living quarters and food. And the indoor toilet, I think, is almost questionable in a lot of ways because of the...
Well, it's very... The concept, the way they're creating it with using water is questionable. That's,
yeah.
I want to bring back the issue of beehive that William brought up earlier. We are nestled and clustered into these hives. And in conjunction with us being made to live in hives, they form the hive mentality around us as well. So we all have to think alike, and we all do think alike, and we adopt these perspectives that, you know, are, for instance, everybody thinks it's normal to use water to flush waste. It's only when you get them outside the box and you say, is that smart? Do animals poop in the streams? No, they don't. And except for fish.
Well, I always heard never drink downstream from the herd. I mean.
Yes. So we are the herd. And a certain life pattern, this is what Agenda 21 Urban Planning is all about, is being created for us. Right, William?
That's exactly right. And yeah. and good comments on that. So, right. You know, when we look at this in detail, let's just move away now. Well, not quite yet. Just give me another second on the state of nature. I raise chickens.
Yeah.
I eat chickens, and not anymore. I've given away my flock. But when I moved into this little town and off the farm, But in order to, in the beginning, what I tried to do was, right out of the books, you basically heat up a quantity of water, and it's a large quantity, and place the bird that you've slaughtered in there, which loosens up all the feathers, then you pluck it all out, and so on and so forth, and so on and so forth. And here I am, I'm looking at my rain barrels, and I'm using gallons and gallons of water to clean these birds down. To bring, you got it. So what I finally decided to do, that this was insanity, and I just started to skin the birds, and then I didn't have to deal with that either. So
I did that to a rooster. Man, it's a tough job. I think it gets easier with practice, but...
Well, people have told me that they're able to process, you know, 30-40 birds at a whack like that, but unless you have access to a well and flowing water or a stream or something like that, it's going to tax a rain barrel in a heartbeat. So, yes, now we can move away from the undeveloped state of nature type of people and go into the developing. We've got, if you think about it from the standpoint of a rural area, my father's farm had an 85-foot dug, 85-foot drilled well, bored well, in a 4-inch casing, and that brought water up through an electric pump. Then they put it, that to the house. And then from the house, we had a septic tank, which we built ourselves. It was a two-chamber tank and the lateral lines. But, of course, there, when the tank ever did fill up, which it did, we would then have be putting our water right back on top of our well. Now, of course, it would go down 85 feet through the gravel and sands in the creek bottom where we lived, but and by the time it gets down there, it's quite a bit cleaner than it was when it started the journey. It only takes a few feet of sand to get most of the undesirables out of water. But so here, that would be your rural. And so once you get a real rural house going, and you get your Country Living magazines, and you get all of the various propaganda, and you're out there in the country, and you've got your television set and all of this, then you start to change your life, and you start living like someone in Manhattan. And so you consume more water. You've got the electric dishwasher. You've got the garbage disposal. You've got your washing machine. We're taking showers all the time, so on and so forth. Then you're gardening and doing all of that. All of a sudden, you start going into this massive water consumption process. Take that, ramp it up another level, go into the suburban. Now, with suburban, that's going to be your lateral sewer extensions, things that I designed. And where you're in a suburban area and you've developed a 5-acre, 10-acre, 100-acre parcel down in a lower area, you've got to lift that sewage up to a level where it can actually get involved with the gravity flow system and move that waste by gravity. So that means you have to have a lift station, which means more electricity. But on a lateral sewer extension, the impetus for the sewer district, and we can get into the municipal aspects of this in a minute, but for the sewer districts, you want the maximum number of people on that line. You want to stop that sewer extension before it gets out into the one house here and another quarter mile away zone, because sewers don't work that way. Sewers depend on water. And so in order to keep the sewers, they call it scouring, to keep the scouring happening, they want to encourage with the television and the magazines and in the schools, you know, bathe them, you know, twice a day, once in the morning and once at night, run the water constantly, because the whole system depends on water to flow those few turds down that pipe. And so if the municipality cannot get the people to participate, then they have to go out with their pump trucks and actually flush those lines out. So further away from the sewer treatment plant that you are, the more work is involved, the more expenses involved, and that's why early on in this process, this was taken over by government. This was a service that was being provided by government, which is a whole other aspect and brings us towards Agenda 21.
Well, people probably think that I'm a liberal in denial or whatever, but I mean, I'm somebody that questions things. And I often, you know, I've seen old antique wash basins that people have. They trade them and collect them and use them for decoration, where you just had like a bowl and a pitcher. And that's how people bathed, you know, 80 years ago or something, especially in the rural areas, you know, going back 150 years or something. But, you know, I often wonder about why they called them those darn dirty oily Arabs. And it turns out that oils, where are they going to bathe? Those oils have anti-yeast and anti-fungus properties. And if you use them on a regular basis, if you've got jock itch or athlete's foot and things like that, it goes away. And I discovered that by accident, you know, and then I start going, well, there's propaganda. Those darn dirty, oily Arabs, they've got some smarts that they learned over a long period of time, living in hot climates with their clothes all, you know, creating humid saunas in their pants or whatever. They had to learn that the hard way, I guess, too. But you don't have to take a bath every day, but we sure are propagandized that if you don't, then you're somehow inferior.
That's right. And your hair and your skin, eczema and stuff like that for people that bathe out of a little pan like that is a non-existent problem.
I've even heard people with psoriasis and dandruff, if they stop using a lot of these products that are full of these phthalates and endocrine disruptor plasticizers and stuff, their dandruff problem goes away.
That's right, and the same with the water system. You know, if you're loaded up with chlorine or fluoride and other things, and you're drinking, you know, in the water, you're just doing yourself a disservice. So
caustic
yeah,
stuff.
It's caustic, it's toxic, but in this discussion, everything that goes into that water has to be dealt with someplace, and so we need to understand that we're part of the problem, and we need to be part of the solution. And the solutions that are being planned, as Sophia brought up, 30 gallons a day in an urban environment where people are going to work, the husband, the wife, the children have to go to school. If they come to school and they're not squeaky clean and bright with their hair brushed and their teeth combed and all the clothes are clean and pressed, you know, that's the problem. The Child Protective Services come out, you're abusing your children. So it's a never-ending cycle.
You cannot even have a child in your home a lot of jurisdictions, unless you have city water, they will declare that your dwelling is not fit for a home or whatever. I forget the language or whatever. But what gets me about a lot of these proposals, Derry Brownfield has talked about how they want to put meters on people's wells and things because I guess the aquifer belongs to everybody. You know, whether or not you have an old property that has water rights included.
Right.
Water rights are going to be huge in the next 50 years. And the hive mentality is what I'm concerned about, to the brainwashing of people around and about water and water use. As William brought up, I had no idea that municipalities actually want people to be frequently using water so that the sewage system works properly.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. So on some level, we are going to be discouraged from conserving water in the interest of the sewage pipes, but then on another level, we're going to be punished. We're going to be held in this narrow band of use. And yet my question is, what about industry? Industry uses a whole lot more water than we do.
Well, they would have the priority, just like the electricity proposals for rolling brownouts and things. The industry would always get theirs. It would be the people that would not always get electricity and always get water.
Right. Now, we have another caller on the line, Charlene from Missouri. Thank you, Mike, for your many comments, many of which were very enlightening. So, Charlene, are you there?
Oh, I listen to William Roberts also. I hear you all the time, but I wanted to tell everybody, we've been living here for about 25 years. We happen to have a lot of acreage, and when we first moved here, we had to build a new home because the other one was falling down. But we flush with sawdust. We have a 5-gallon bucket, and I flush with sawdust, and every day I carry it out. We have two long burying fields, and on each side of where I dump my garbage, I put a string down the middle, put the garbage in the middle, and on each side I take our sawdust bucket and dump them. And in the summertime, we learn from the Bible that you bury your waste. So you don't want to bury them real deeply, because we learned that from listening to a solar energy lecture. And we have never got sick. I never get the flu. I've not had a cold for 25 years. We don't use any kind of drugs or anything. We live very simply and very well, and we have a lagoon for our gray water, and we've never had a toilet. And I think the exercise is great for people. I'm 78, and I praise God that I have to walk out and dump this bucket. And we have a source of sawdust from the sawmill. It's not real fine. And we read 20 centuries of farming when we were looking for different answers, and we realized, and also I separate our liquid waste from the solid waste, and the liquid waste can be diluted, and an excellent source of nitrogen. You just be careful how you use it, because we used to have goats and fences. We have our gardens spread out all over the place, so we don't have any concentrated places, and it works beautifully. And as far as getting sick, you know, being so worried, we don't bury anything near our home, but it's within a field where we grow. Our garbage grows what we call God's farm. All kinds of things come up, and they're extremely healthy. I just wanted to tell everybody that.
So we are being interrupted by a break, Charlene. We're going to have to come back on the other side. You're listening to Expansion with Sophia on republicbroadcasting.org, the RBN network, and we've been talking about waste management for the last couple of hours. We had a caller who described a very efficient and satisfying way of lifestyle, but she happens to be in a rural area. So, William, are you still with us? And we're going to actually go into your show, which is following this one. I don't know if you'll continue with the same subject.
I don't think it's been so much fun to talk dirty on the air in a long time, so I absolutely invite you to come join us on Become Vocal Local Sophia. And callers, just consider this broadcast a continuing episode. We'll go for another hour here. But the caller was absolutely right. I have not been ill in so long that I can't remember the last time I was ill. And a lot of the illness that we have is lifestyle related. But the idea of taking your night soil bucket out and rinsing it and spading it in the ground and all that, that gets you the fresh air, some exercise, some vitamin D through your eyes, and it's just good for you. And if we learn that we, in order to really be successful on this planet, we need to understand a basic concept that I it came to my mind when I was gardening one day. I had a double dug garden beds, three of them, 20 feet long, 4 feet wide. And one day I thought to myself as I was putting my compost in the and digging it in, if you feed the soil, the soil will feed you. But if you starve the soil, you starve yourself. And so one of the things that happened when we went into the industrial era is that we moved off of our farms and out of the rural areas. And instead of having home looms and silversmiths and copper makers and things like that, and blacksmiths and carpenters and fishermen and all that home industry, instead of that, we were brought into these beehives, and it's going to get nothing but worse. And as we go into the next hour, we'll start to talk about Agenda 21, smart growth, municipal government, the idea of home rule, and some of the other issues. But definitely, when we think about processed water, we're talking about enormous quantities. A CAFO, a confined animate feeding operation, here to raise 30,000 chickens. You know, we're talking millions of gallons of water that's sucked up out of a rural aquifer, and then it goes away in the form of meat and doesn't return to the ground.
Well, again, this is the separation of industry and the special treatment that industry gets and the encouragement of humans to participate. I mean, if you talk about how much water and energy is used just in agribusiness, raising cows, it's an attrition process. We eat one stake, and that represents a huge amount of life proceeding from grass to the cow to finally this delivery of something that's actually been a collecting agent of toxin, because, you know, it all goes up that food chain. So as the previous caller described, there's something very satisfying about being part of the cycle, and I think that people in urban communities lose that. They're not connected to the land. They don't understand how their lives are integrated with the ecosystem and the functioning of this whole huge planet that we live on. So I was fascinated reading the Harper's article because it was the first time my mind was opened to all of this, you know. And then when you understand that they're trying to exploit the materials that ensue, that's another fascinating angle.
Certainly,
this is the end of my show and the beginning of your show, William. I'll stay on.